Good afternoon. I'm Khaki Walton. Checking on the arts is made possible by contributing listeners, the Orpheum Theater, and the Dixon Gallery and Gardens. The Memphis Brooks Museum of Art is showcasing a very exciting exhibit this summer. You'll see the diversity, vitality, and creativity of African American art in the soul of a city. Memphis collects African American art. It's an exhibit of more than 100 important and thought-provoking paintings, photographs, drawings, sculptures, mixed media, which have all been selected from private and public collections in Memphis. Marina Pacini is the chief curator at the Brooks Museum. She's also the curator of American Modern and Contemporary Art there. And this is her baby, and she joins me this afternoon to talk about it. Hi, good to see you.
Hi, thanks for having me, Khaki.
Once again, you're coming in with a terrific exhibit that everybody has the chance to see from this Saturday through the beginning of September. This is like such a great exhibit to have during the summer months because there's a lot of stuff connected to it, a film series, music, everything.
We're expecting that we're going to do very well with this exhibition this summer. I think the exhibition's really wide-ranging in the different kinds of art that are included, and I honestly believe there's something here for everyone, and I'm hoping that the community will come out.
Well, this is amazing to me because this, as I mentioned, is all from private collections from Memphians and from places like Lemoyne and College. And so how did you get the idea for this exhibit, and then how did you figure out where to go to get the work? Because that seems like you had to be kind of a detective.
Absolutely. The museum has been doing these Memphis Collects, a series of Memphis Collects exhibitions for many years. We pick different themes. There's been a Georgian exhibition, silver exhibitions, and this was something I've been wanting to do for quite some time, and it's meaning an exhibition that focuses on the work of African American artists. And you're absolutely right. It requires a lot of detective work, basically going out and talking to anybody and everybody that I ran into. Obviously, I couldn't meet with everybody in Memphis. but to ask of anybody who had artwork hanging in their homes or in their businesses that would be appropriate for the exhibition. And people have been fantastic. A lot of people opened up their homes for me to come and visit. Institutions, businesses, First Tennessee is lending some wonderful works. As you said, Lemoyne Owen. Probably the three biggest collectors, I can't thank Elliot Perry enough.
Oh, my goodness.
He has to be one of the most generous people with his collection. It's just extraordinary. He started originally collecting modern works, pre-1945, 1960, things like that. And he then shifted his focus about 9 or 10 years ago to focus on contemporary art. And what's interesting about him is that he didn't sell off the earlier work. He hung on to it. So he has a really nice survey of art by African American artists, and he's also extremely generous in sharing it. So I would say the backbone of the exhibition is the work that comes from him. And one of the things I love about this exhibition is we have an audio tour going with it. And Elliot came in today for taping for his part of the audio tour, and I didn't have to ask him any questions. He basically just went and did such a nice job of explaining the work and its meaning to him, why he acquired it. I think people are really going to enjoy the audio tour.
Well, we're going to get into more stories from the audio tour in a minute, but just to tell everybody, Elliot Perry played basketball for the University of Memphis.
He did.
And I know he probably went on to play for other people, but that's how I know him. And so to see somebody like him in his age, to be aware that collecting art is a cool thing, and this is not the first time that his work has been seen in the community, and it's really terrific to know that he cares as much about art to become a serious collector, and to again be the backbone of this exhibit. It's amazing.
Well, he gives a lot to the city across the board. It's not just in the arts, but needless to say, that's the one area where we benefit from. There's also John Jarrett, who has an extraordinary collection of art by self-taught artists. It's mind-boggling going over to his house. I almost go into a coma because it's so overwhelming. Again, he was extremely generous. I mean, as were all of the lenders. You know, some people only lent one thing, some people lent more. But this exhibition couldn't have happened without all the generous loans that people were willing to share with the city so that everybody could have an opportunity to enjoy these great works of art that reside here.
So you have regional artists, you have Memphis artists, you have marquee names that are known all over the world.
Absolutely. That was one of the things I felt very strongly about. It needed to be really representational. And, you know, the diversity comes from chronology. I've got some artists who are, I think, around 30 to artists who died in the 19th century.
Right.
So a real span. And then also, you know, the diversity of the media that they're working in and their artistic styles. You know, there are a lot of artists who are working representationally and then some working abstractly. So it's just a real cross-section.
Well, one of the artists who paints things but also does abstract work too, Norman Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking online. There are a lot of names here that I had, oh my gosh, I've got to really study because some names I knew, some people I had no idea about. I had heard of Carrie Mae Weems, the photographer, but I didn't really know her work. And so you've got photographs by her in the exhibit too.
Absolutely. And with Norman Lewis, one of the things that's the challenges that earlier African-American artists had to deal with is that they were not offered the opportunities to exhibit in galleries, or museums, their work wasn't reviewed in mainstream press. They weren't included in the big art historical anthologies. That work has been, that balance has been redressed, but mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why artists like Norman Lewis are not as well known as some of their peers from that period. Carrie Mae Weems has been very well known. We actually acquired that piece is from our collection, mm-hmm. And the museum acquired it in 2001. She came to the city. We had she gave a wonderful talk. She did a project with the students from Overton High School. So that has some real meaning to the museum. But you're absolutely right. There's this, really interesting mixture of the local and the regional and the national all coming together.
Well, now there's another artist, and this artist was very important to you because you're trying to make sure that, well, you're hoping this can become part of the Brooks's permanent collection. Tell us about Sonia Clark.
One of the things that I wanted to accomplish with this exhibition was to increase the museum's holdings of work by African American artists. We have some great work, but we could certainly use some more. And so one of the things I did, I worked with Elliot Perry and James and Rush Patterson, who are joining my husband and me in providing the seed money to start the process of acquiring this work by Sonia Clark. I spent some time working with her. She sent me some options. We took a look at them, and I selected this piece called Woven Combs that, when you look at it from across the room, you think you're looking at a tapestry. It starts way up on the wall and then comes all the way down the wall onto the floor. And it's woven out of those little black pocket combs everyone has.
Wow.
And it's a really extraordinary thing. You look at it and, you know, you're initially intrigued by the fact that it's pocket combs. And then the internal conversation starts to happen about what exactly is going on here. And she's very much interested in people thinking about issues of hair and the significance that it has, you know, different notions of styling and aesthetics. And you know, if you think about straightening of hair and dreadlocks and afros and the larger ramifications that the choices that people make in terms of the hairdos that they have, you know, she just is very interested in having people think about all of these things. So it's aesthetically fabulous to look at, but it also raises really interesting questions about our culture.
And, you know, you see somebody, you look at their hair, and you know, you don't want to do it. I mean, maybe it's just a natural thing, but you go, oh, that person's blah, blah, blah. You know, he has an afro. Maybe he's into Black Power. You know, this person has dreadlocks. They're blah, blah, blah. And you sort of label people that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I found this really nice quote from Bell Hooks talking about, and she was specifically referring to how African Americans look at art, but I think it's something that really applies more broadly, that people look at art for two basic reasons. One is to sort of affirm the beliefs that they already have, and then number two is to look at things that challenge the way they view the world. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of contemporary artists, specifically through the media and the imagery that they make, are asking people to stop and take a look and reconsider their preconceived notions about the world that we all live in, which is a great thing.
Well, I don't want to. We were talking about hair. It just makes me think of Shakia Booker. Is that how you say it? Shakia Booker. Because I looked up her images, and it's like she created a sculpture with hair.
What that is a tire. That's blown tire. But I think that's a lovely comparison. And again, it looks like something that's exploding. And that's the image that shows up on the invitation and a lot of the public relations material around town. It's from our collection, and that's part of it, is it's easier for us to get access to images, right, of things that we own. But yeah, there are several other works in the exhibit that also have to do with hair, so it's definitely a topic.
Well, you said that's how you arranged it as thematically, civil rights movement, religion, music.
Absolutely. There are art historical sections on landscape and still life, and genre painting and portraiture, not surprisingly, and then other thematic areas, dealing with, as you say, religion, music, the civil rights movement, and then there's a big section on contemporary, self-taught art, abstraction. So, these sort of bigger themes to help people think about the objects that are included in the exhibition.
Well, you were talking about the audio tour, and there's some fascinating conversations happening in the audio tour, and one of those comes from our good friend Darmy Bailey.
He did several entries. One of my favorites is the one that he did about Romare Bearden. In the 70s, he was on the city council in Berkeley and noticed that the council had representations of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, and suggested that perhaps there should be some imagery of African Americans. And the idea was accepted, and he and I believe one of his other council members worked with Romare Bearden to create something for the city council. And he got to know Bearden in the course of this. And when the project was done, Bearden made him a collage that he sent to him. It's hanging in the exhibition. There's, notes to Darmy Bailey on it. And it's a really great example of Bearden's collage. And it's lovely that it's got this local connection to it.
I love it. I looked at his images, and they really are, they're just the vivid colors and the focus on different aspects of African American life. There's one that I saw on a website, and it's great work. It looks like New Orleans, and it reminds me of, there was an exhibit that you did a few years ago. Oh, and I'm trying to think of the artist,
Jacob Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the painter who did a lot of stuff around the Harlem Renaissance. He's included in this exhibit as well.
Absolutely. We have a lovely print, Aspiration from First Tennessee. And, he's an example of artists who were working in a figurative style. And, African-American artists had a big challenge because for many of them, they were charged with trying to combat all of the negative stereotyping of African-Americans. And, for some artists, they felt very conflicted because they felt that in some instances that restricted their possibilities. But on the other hand, there was that sense of obligation to the community to help overpower all of those negative images.
Well, you have, we were talking about self-taught artists, and I'm assuming she's self-taught, and there's a fascinating story that goes along with this. Valerie Maynard, she's a local artist?
I really don't know a lot about her. She must be from the region, but the sculpture that's included in the exhibition is directly related to the story of her brother. He was convicted of first-degree murder and sent to prison, and he contended that he was innocent. And she started to create this body of artwork to sell so that she could use the funds to help underwrite his legal fees. And the sculpture on the back of it has a listing of all the prisons that he was incarcerated in. And the story has a really nice ending in that the Innocence Project got involved and were able to overturn his conviction, and he was, in fact, freed. And I'm sure that his sister's efforts on his behalf had a lot to do with the fact that that happened. And it's one of those stories that just...
I mean, look... Art can change lives. There you go. I mean, that's how much. That's incredible proof that, that's true. Wow. You know, and on a lighter note or an educational note, we were talking about Elliot Perry collecting art. One of the conversations in the audio tour, you have some people talking to each other, and people might be overwhelmed. I don't have enough money to buy art. I can't afford to do this. It's not as difficult as you may think it is, and there's a conversation included in the exhibit about how just a regular person can get art. You can make a deal with the artist. I know a friend who, and I've said it on this show before, she'll see a piece and then she'll give the artist post-dated check, like a year's worth of checks, and they're made out for a certain amount each month, and that's how she has one of the best collections of my friends. She's gone about it that way.
No, absolutely. The artists are very much interested in seeing their work go out into the world, and will work with people with coming up with payment schedules. I don't know how I could have forgotten this. One of the last things that I'll tell you about is I've got 4 sculptures on loan from St. Paul Spiritual Holy Temple, and they are absolutely extraordinary. It was a complete fluke where when I started to put this together, the timing was just right that the folks involved decided that they were interested in making the work more available, and so we have 4 amazing sculptures. And I hate to say this because for many people, this is the only way they'll recognize this. What I'm talking about is what is erroneously known as Voodoo Village. But the sculptures that were made by Doc Wash Harris and his grandson, Washington James Harris, are just amazing works of art. And it's a real coup that we were able to exhibit, include 4 of these works. And I just want to emphasize the fact that the temple is closed to the public, and the family asks that we please respect their privacy. But please do come to the museum, and you can see the sculptures and hear Mook, his nickname, talking about the sculptures, and he does a really nice job of explaining them.
There's so much to talk about, but I guess we have to draw it to close now, but people can come by. I hope that we've whetted everybody's appetite to come see the exhibit, and there's a lot of different things going on. You're collaborating with community groups like the Hattie Lou Theater and the Stax Academy. There's a film series that you're partnering with Stax on, and I'm excited about this. Wastax, the great documentary, is going to air 7 p.m. Thursday, June 14th, and that's celebrating the 40th anniversary of that landmark 1972 soul music concert. I remember seeing the ads for that when I was in, you know, 7th grade. I'm dating myself. But some other terrific screenings that Andrea Lyle at the Brooks has put together, and you can go to the website, brooksmuseum.org, to find out more about that. And SunTrust Bank and some other terrific community partners have helped to make this exhibit possible. So I know that you are very grateful to them as well, and especially the people who gave their art. Because you wonder, did you ever have to twist an arm? Oh, please, can we have it? And then maybe you have the wife or the husband saying, I don't want to let it leave my house. But then somebody relents, and now you have a lovely gift to show the community.
Absolutely. People were really, really kind and generous.
Well, yay. I'm glad that they were, because this is an incredible exhibit that you have the opportunity to see starting this Saturday. It runs through September 2nd. And, you know, when you've got company in town over the summer, bring them to the Brooks and show them this great representation of Memphians collecting African-American art. And we want to mention one quick thing. You have said, you know, this is not by any means a comprehensive exhibit. It's expansive, but, you know, you couldn't get everybody. You only have exhibited what you were able to discover in your detective work.
Exactly. So there's some other wonderful artists in the city who are not included, and it doesn't mean that they aren't worthy. And maybe next time.
Maybe next time. There can be Soul of a City Part 2 next summer. I hope so. Memphis Brooks Museum of Art presenting Soul of the City. Memphis collects African-American art again, opening this Saturday, running through September 2nd. More than 100 pieces selected from private and public collections in Memphis. And I learned about some new artists today preparing for this interview, so you're going to be surprised too. Brooksmuseum.org or for more information, 544-6200. Go to the Brooks Museum website to find out about all of the events that they are presenting in connection with this fascinating exhibit that is curated by Marina Pacini, the Chief Curator and Curator of American Modern and Contemporary Art, and she's been my guest this afternoon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Khaki.
Checking on the Arts Made Possible by the Orpheum Theater, presenting Mamma Mia June 5th through 10th, the ultimate feel-good show and smash hit musical combines ABBA's greatest hits with an enchanting tale of love, laughter, and friendship. Children under 4 not admitted. For information, 525-3000 or orpheum-memphis.com. And the Dixon Gallery and Gardens hosting Family Day Saturday, June 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Family Day is open to the public and features live music, games, contests, and more that the whole family can enjoy. Details available at 761-5250 or dixon.org.